to the very last case of the day, which is 08-1165, United States v. Mikulowicz. Mr. Meyer, good morning. No, good afternoon, good afternoon.
May it please the court, Steve Meyer on behalf of Michael Mikulowicz. This case, at its essence, presents a scenario where law enforcement took away the issuing state court judge's ability to evaluate the reliability and veracity of an informant in a search warrant affidavit. This law enforcement officer gave it to himself and took it away from the state trial court judge. As is not typical, but important, the wording of the affidavit is crucial. And paragraph 3 of the affidavit in support of the search warrant is the touchstone for my argument. That paragraph indicates that Agent Ohm told the state court judge that he believed Ms. Brandy Colgrove to be accurate and reliable because she is a private citizen. He goes on to state that Ms. Colgrove's allegations were corroborated by her mother, Beverly Colgrove. That is the last mention of Beverly Colgrove in the affidavit. How does Beverly Colgrove substantiate her daughter's allegations? What does she say? There is no factual presentation in the balance of the affidavit that substantiates that.
You're complaining about the search warrant itself.
That's correct. Well,
pause. Let's keep going with that.
I'm sorry.
What you're complaining about is what was found in the car.
That's correct.
There's no need for a search warrant in the car.
Well,
so where are we?
Well, the car was listed on the search warrant. That's
well,
why
I don't care whether the car could have been searched without a search warrant.
I don't
understand. Constantly.
Unfortunately, I don't understand how they get into the car without a search warrant.
Well, they open it. They arrested him in the car. They take the car to the station. They search the car. Right? Those are the facts, as I understand.
That's a routine search for a man in custody.
When officers have probable cause to believe that illegal drugs and guns are in a car, they don't need a warrant.
We don't need it at all. That's Madison law.
The car, there would have been no stopping of the car without this warrant.
It doesn't make any difference. They make a stop. Now we take them into custody. We can search the car. It's just that simple.
If they
are
had probable
cause. Are you
suggesting
they didn't have probable cause?
They did not have probable cause.
To stop the car?
They didn't have probable cause to stop the car. They stopped the car subsequent to the issuance of this warrant.
But you missed something. They didn't have to get a warrant for probable cause to exist to stop the car.
I understand
that.
But they have to have some reason to stop the car, Your Honor. You just can't willy-nilly stop a vehicle.
They have probable cause in spades here.
To stop the vehicle?
Yeah.
No, they had no probable cause to stop the car. I mean, let's step back, because paragraph 7 talks about the car, and I know you don't want to talk about the search warrant affidavit, but paragraph 7 is the car, okay? Paragraph 7 says, okay, she came in and she said, according to Agent Ohm, by the way, I saw the trunk of his car, all right? That's what you're saying would give him the probable cause to stop the car, right? And he's got guns and audio cassettes in the trunk of that car. And I saw that on March 6th. All right? Now, the problem is, when she first met with the officers, she signed a written statement that said the last time she had seen anything in the trunk was a month ago, was a month prior. That information contradicts what's in the search warrant affidavit. Now, I know we're off the affidavit, but that paragraph 7 is what the court seems to be focusing on as the basis to stop the vehicle. All the information to allow them to stop the vehicle came from Ms. Colgrove, who they knew. They knew beyond a doubt she was a thief, that she had owed Mr. Mikulevich money, that she was a drug user, and that she was a drug seller. And then this paragraph 7, which, by the way, there was no DCI report prepared, it just shows up in the affidavit for the search warrant, contradicts the handwritten statement by Ms. Colgrove. So the question to me, did they have probable cause to stop the car? Absolutely not.
My colleagues.
Absolutely not. The whole stop flowed from the fact they got the warrant to begin with.
Well, from the fact they got information to begin with.
Right.
You know,
what's your best evidence that any errors or omissions in the warrant application were intentional lies, or that the statements were made with reckless disregard for the truth?
By the very first phraseology in paragraph 3. She is a private citizen and accurate and reliable.
She is a private citizen. She's not a private citizen?
Well, she's a private citizen, but that suggests that she has a clean background. There are code words used by law enforcement.
Private citizen indicates clean background.
Well, if the affidavit suggests that so-and-so is a confidential informant, you come to one conclusion. If the affidavit says they are a co-defendant, you come to another conclusion. They are a private citizen who, by the way, I won't mention the fact, has a long and torturous history with law enforcement and has a motive to fabricate and get even with Mr. Mikulevich.
What better person is there?
What better person is there if there is some independent verification of what she's saying?
Oh, she's got her mommy.
But we don't know what mom said. I will.
She soon had her mommy. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Meyer.
Thank you.
How about Mr. Anderson? You've waited long enough for this opportunity.
It was worth the wait. Good morning. My name is Bob Anderson. I'm an assistant United States attorney in the Western District. I have the privilege of representing the United States in this matter. The issue boils down to here. What more definitive, when we get down, whether it's the Franks issue or the probable cause issue, what more definitive corroboration can you have than physical evidence of the crime itself, which is what Brandy Colgrove brought to the police before they even went and got the search warrant, which is why they stopped the car and arrested him on the road, because they already had probable cause to arrest him for the wiretapping offense. But the district court properly determined there was no Franks violation in the search warrant affidavit, and the state court issuing judge had sufficient probable cause on the four corners of the affidavit itself, not throwing in any extraneous information. And the appellant's entire argument focuses here on the fact that he believes not enough, as he alluded to, not enough dirt was cast upon the ex-girlfriend, the informant here, who whose complaint about the wiretapping was the genesis of the search warrant. Now, Special Agent Ulm explained, when we did have a hearing on this, he explained that he didn't include information about some of her past past conduct because, as to the charged offense that she had pending, she had not been convicted of that offense. And ultimately, she wasn't convicted of a criminal offense. She was convicted of an ordinance citation. But at that point in time, she wasn't convicted of anything. And he didn't include anything about her past involvement in drug sales, which the investigators had been investigating her involvement and Mr. Miklovich's involvement in drug sales. He didn't disclose that because that would obviously tell her they were investigating her past conduct in drug sales, which was a couple of years earlier. And it would tip off Mr. Miklovich about the rest of their investigation as well. He didn't include details about her past drug use because he didn't, when he met with her, he saw no signs that she was under the influence of any drugs or had any, sometimes methamphetamine users exhibit some sort of damage to their coherency based on their methamphetamine use. But Special Agent Ulm, who has testified that he was involved in a plethora of methamphetamine cases, didn't see any signs that she exhibited any lack of coherency or cogency in the things that she was saying. And her past drug use wasn't really relevant to the offense that they were investigating and getting the search warrant for, which was illegal wiretapping. But paramount to this, Investigator Ulm's eyes, what trumped any question of any of these minutia of dirt that could be thrown at the informant here was, or concerns about her reliability that the appellant wants to raise, is that he had in his hands objective physical evidence of the crime. He had one of the copies of the surreptitious tape recordings, wiretaps that Mr. Miklovich was perpetrating. The bottom line here is that when police have compelling corroborating evidence, like actual physical proof of the crime that corroborates the information from the informant, a scattergun minutia of impeachment information does not meaningfully vitiate probable cause. Even if you look at one of the cases cited by the appellant in his brief, Redrick, he cites the portion of Redrick that says merely saying that an informant is reliable isn't enough. And the opinion does say that. I think that was authored by Judge Easterbrook. The opinion does say that, but in the very next paragraph it says, but here we not only have the information from the informant, but we have more than that, because this informant went out and conducted three controlled buys from the target, from this individual he's saying has the drugs now, conducted three controlled buys. We have physical evidence that this guy is a drug dealer. Here, analogous to that, you're not relying on what she says alone. The police had physical evidence of the fact that he was committing the offense that he was. Examining the claims, and that's what exactly the district court found, that this really does trump any arguments about her credibility. Examining those items that could have been put in the affidavit, the district court, magistrate used the word wit. It didn't make a whit of evidence whether this was true or not true, that physical evidence meant that the informant's information was reliable. Now, then, only once you get past the Franks issue, you've crossed that threshold, the district court correctly looked at the four corners of the affidavit itself. What the appellant seems to want to argue here is that the district court committed an error the appellant takes issue with the probable cause finding here in saying that the district court did exactly what the state court did and read into the probable cause analysis the fact that the police said the tape corroborates Brandy Colgrove. And at the Franks hearing, we had testimony from Special Agent Ulm that, in fact, he listened to the tape. The affidavit doesn't say explicitly he listened to the tape, but implicitly and reasonably, the reasonable implicit inference is he had to have listened to the tape. Police had to have listened to the tape to even make the allegation in the affidavit that the tape corroborated Brandy Colgrove. So the district court considered these matters. There's nothing wrong in the district court making, even if we didn't have a Franks hearing, even if we hadn't had any testimony, and there would not have been anything wrong in the district court looking at the same affidavit that the state court had looked at and saying, well, the police say that tape corroborates what she says. It makes sense to me that they had to have listened to it. There's nothing wrong in the district court making that same reasonable inference and saying, of course there's probable cause once you've corroborated the informant here. So there was no Franks violation. There was sufficient probable cause for issuance of the search warrant, and this court, unless it has any questions, should affirm the judgment of the district court below. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Meyer, 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
I know. A long way to come for 2 minutes.
Well, my wife and daughter enjoyed the trip down last night. My credit card didn't, but they certainly are. And the longer I'm here, the happier they are.
They force you into bankruptcy.
Yeah, that'll be next. We seem to be on two different pages, and I'm going to try to coalesce what's happened. Obviously, all the briefing that took place between the parties dealt with the search warrant affidavit. Today, the court raises the issue of the vehicle being stopped outside of the concept of the affidavit. And there is intermingling because the information that's floating around in terms of the affidavit and the information that if you say they aren't relying on the affidavit, and I actually take issue with that, that in effect that's what caused them to stop the car, that they had these affidavits and they were running out, and it was house, place of business, automobile. And bingo, they saw the automobile, and that's what generated
the
stop.
The information they put in the affidavits.
Right, exactly. But they didn't put everything.
They had the information before they put it in the affidavit. That gave them probable cause to stop the car and make the arrest.
And part of what is what the government has suggested is that they had this audio tape. And the magistrate characterized it as the corpus delicti. And I really take issue with that characterization, because although there's an audio tape and it has people talking on it, there is nothing to suggest where it was from, what were the circumstances under which that audio tape was made, who did it, when. And that is just solely from Ms. Colgrove. If we take an analogy, let's say she walked in the station and said, I found meth in my husband's house, and here's the meth. I don't think that would have been enough. Thank you. I appreciate your time and listening.
Well, we appreciate you and Mr. Anderson and the liveliness of our last argument and the case. Thank you. And the case will be taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow. Until tomorrow at 9 o'clock. And Mr. Meyer, we appreciate your wife paying 10.25% in sales tax and helping our
Mr. Meyer's
our county. Okay.